Beatty versus Olin Corporation. Oh, also Mr. Barron. So you're back.
You can't get rid of me, Your Honor.
That's okay.
May it please the court. Jennifer. In this case, the key date, the key fact that we would like you to focus on is November 9, 2007. It's a Wednesday. Mr. Beatty's employment was terminated because he wasn't at work on that day. That's one of the days during the week of November 7 to 11 that they used as the reason for terminating him. And it's true. Mr. Beatty was not at work on November 9, 2007. He was over in St. Louis getting a workers' compensation independent medical exam that Olin sent him to. And yet one of the key dates that they're using to terminate his employment is a date they're saying he was wrongfully absent from work, but he was actually right where they told him to be. Jared Beatty wants to work. He went to work when he was injured. He worked for 2 days in severe pain, and then his doctor took him off work from November.
What's the evidence that he was discharged because he had or would intended to file a workers' compensation charge?
First of all, he had both. If I go to the Illinois Workers' Compensation Retaliatory Discharge Cause of Action, there's three things we have to prove. We have to prove that he exercised rights under the workers' compensation statute or was intending to, and the fact is that both of those are true. He had already received temporary...
Well, did the company know that?
Yes, the company had already paid him TTD for this injury, temporary total disability for a period of time in October for this injury.
No. Did it know about about his workers' compensation claim?
Absolutely. The company had him on work. Specifically, their documents show that they had him on work comp leave for a period of time after the September 27, 2000.
Was this a matter of their internal rules or the workman's compensation law?
I'm sorry, I didn't understand the question.
What, giving him that leave, was that on the basis of their own rules or because he'd filed a workers' compensation claim or what?
He got fired within 6 weeks of his getting the work comp injury. He was injured on...
I'm not talking about the injury. I'm talking about, did they think he had or was going to file a workers' compensation claim, and that's why they fired him?
Yes, Your Honor. The answer to that question is absolutely yes.
What's the evidence that this email from Connie DeProw came to the attention of the people responsible for firing him, Mr. Moore, perhaps?
Mr. Moore is the person who they identify as the decision maker. We do not believe Mr. Moore is a decision maker. Mr. Moore's duties here were simply that of ministerial.
Connie, so DeProw is the one who writes the memo in which she says, can we treat this absence as unapproved to avoid workers' comp?
Yes.
So there's actually a memo in the company's files linking his absence to workers' comp.
There absolutely is. Right from the very get-go, they put him under surveillance. They thought he was playing games with him. And then Connie DeProw writes the email that says, well, we have him under surveillance. It's not going to help us for the work comp because apparently he really is injured. But maybe it'll help us with firing him. That's the labor relations. So not only Connie DeProw, who puts this whole thing in motion.
So how do we know that Moore knows any of this? Is Moore in the loop?
We don't. And Moore doesn't know. But Moore is simply has a ministerial function here.
So you think it's Kern who fired him?
No. Moore's the one. There's no question that Moore's the one that said send him the termination letter. Moore did that. But Moore did it based on the information that he was provided, which was that he was on unapproved absence. No call, no show. Moore doesn't know.
And that comes from where? From the medical department?
Right. It all goes through. They link their medical department and their work comp department together.
And is Connie DeProw in the medical department?
She is.
Okay.
All right.
What do you mean when you say his discharge was causally related to the exercise of rights under the Act? What does that mean?
Well, that is the burden. That's what the Illinois Supreme Court has said is what we must prove.
I'm asking you what it means.
It means that he exercised his rights under the workers' compensation statute.
Or was about to.
Or was about to. And in this case, he did both. One of the rights that he exercised
was... Okay. Answer my question.
Sorry. What does it mean that it's causally connected?
Yeah,
What it means is he used his rights and he was fired for using his rights.
Fired for using his rights. That's the retaliation. So what is the evidence that the company fired him because he invoked his rights?
That goes to the Grabs and Hollowell cases that we have...
Cases. What is the evidence that he was fired because he exercised his rights?
He was followed his own doctor's orders to stay off work.
That you're not answering my question. I'm not interested in that. I'm saying if he was fired because he was following his doctor's instructions, that is not retaliation.
I would disagree, Your Honor. I think the Hollowell...
No, that is not retaliation. The doctor... Suppose you go to some quack and he tells you, you can't work, you twisted your little finger, you're totally disabled for 10 weeks or something like that. And he goes to the company and says, look, my doctor told me, I'm totally disabled because I twisted my little finger. And the company says, he's a quack and we're not going to give you this leave and go away. That's not retaliation for exercising rights under the Workmen's Compensation Act. There's no right under the Workmen's Compensation Act to get poor medical advice.
There is
so what about DePro, though? I think you have to link her in, or you don't have any evidence.
To answer Judge Posner's question first, Hollowell, Grabs, and Sequeira all...
I'm not going anywhere with that. We've got to have retaliation. That's the name of the tort.
Your Honor, I keep trying to answer your question. You
need to answer it with evidence, though, I think. You can't answer it with cases.
Okay. The evidence is that this Illinois workers' compensation retaliatory discharge case law...
That, of course, not... Why don't you answer Judge Wood's question instead?
I'm trying to answer your question, Your Honor.
You can't answer my question. So answer her question.
I can answer your question, Your Honor, and I'm trying to. And I really, please let me. Under Hollowell, Grabs, those cases specifically say you can't make an employee choose between following his own physician's orders and returning to work. That making him make that choice under Illinois common law is a violation and is retaliatory discharge.
That has nothing to do with workman's compensation. Nothing whatsoever to do with it.
Well, then I guess you're disagreeing with those cases.
Yeah, well, there's language in those cases, and there's other language which says, yes, it's retaliation. You have to show that the company knew and was trying to discourage the filing of workman's compensation claims. You can't just pluck out, isolated sentences from opinions.
You
just think of the logic of it. How on earth could there be any connection between a workman's compensation law and some principle that you're always entitled to follow what your doctor tells you, no matter how ridiculous it is, and it prevents you from doing any gainful employment?
Your Honor, the doctor he's seeing is...
Just think of the logic of what you're saying. You go to a doctor, the doctor says you can't work, and the company says, well, okay, you can't work, we still have to pay you, you're not working. What if it's a long period of time?
That would be the Heartline case, and I agree with that. Here we're in 6 weeks, a short period of time, there's no question he suffers a work-related...
Nothing to do with workman's compensation. You've got this idea that you're entitled to... That a company can't question a person's doctor.
That is exactly what the case law in Illinois says.
Your view of the case law. I think you're exaggerating those cases.
With respect, I don't believe I am.
Those cases don't dispense with the causation requirement for
Absolutely.
The wrongful discharge tort, and that's the point here. Whatever they they say about conflicting doctors' opinions is quite irrelevant here because we just don't have that. What we have here is a contest on causation, and nothing in those cases dispenses with the causation requirement. In fact, they all talk about it in very clear terms. And what we are missing here is evidence that Moore's decision had any causal connection to his intention to file a workers' compensation claim, because Moore didn't know anything about it.
And if Moore was a decision maker in the way we normally use that term, I would agree with you. Moore was not a decision maker. The decision maker was really Connie DeProe in the medical department, who put him on unapproved absence.
She had nothing to do with the decision to terminate him. Moore made the decision. Moore implemented the decision.
Moore's duty.
Based on information from the clerk in his department that he wasn't showing up for work and hadn't called in.
Because he was put on unapproved absence by the medical department. If he's on approved absence, then he doesn't get fired. And the medical department sends him to an IME on November 9th, and if they don't tell anybody else, and so he keeps showing up as unapproved absences, when he's doing exactly what they've asked him to do. He's where they've asked him to be. On November 9th, he's right where they sent him to be. And that is evidence that the jury could conclude is an intent to retaliate. If I ask you to go over here and then I punish you for not being here, isn't that evidence of a retaliatory motive? Isn't that evidence of some type of effort to set you up for failure? We would think it would be. And that goes.
He's supposed to check in.
He was told specifically, and the evidence before the court is that he was told, and it makes perfect sense, he'd given them a note, I'm off work. They know he's going to be off from November 2 to November 19th, and they told that somebody in the medical department told him, you don't need to call in. Then they punish him for not calling in, which when he was told he didn't need to call in. That also is evidence of a retaliatory motive, an effort to set him up for termination.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Bauer. Ms. Sandifer?
May it please the court, counsel, Joanne Sandifer for Olin Corporation. Mr. Beatty is trying to make this case something it's not. Mr. Beatty was not terminated because he was on unapproved leave. It's undisputed from the record that he was terminated because he failed to call in his absences in accordance with the company policy and the collective bargaining agreement. It's a very simple case. There is absolutely no evidence in this case that the decision maker, Mr. Moore, was even aware that Beatty had suffered a work-related injury.
He was told he didn't have to call in.
The only evidence of that in the record, Your Honor, is Mr. Beatty's own testimony.
But we don't follow the common law rules that people aren't entitled to testify. His testimony that someone at the company told him he didn't have to call in is competent. It's a direct report.
I don't believe it is, Your Honor. I don't think it's enough to defeat summary judgment.
Why?
Because
if I was testifying about whether I was driving down Dearborn Street because I'm the one who said it, then that has to be disregarded on summary judgment?
But he's really trying to...
No, seriously. What's wrong with individual testimony?
Well, an individual is trying to establish...
direct experience.
Because when an individual is trying to establish an agreement, essentially an agreement with Olin that he did not have to call in, there has to be more to establish that agreement than his own uncorroborated testimony. He needs some corroboration.
Why?
And in this case...
Why? Where does that corroboration rule come from?
We've cited a case in our brief to that.
Yeah, but we've also disapproved some of those cases, which seem to follow this old rule that, you know, you can't trust the parties, and so we won't take their... We go with unrebutted testimony from employer representatives all the time. Mr. Moore, for example, saying I was the decision maker or whatever. I just don't understand what's incompetent about that. Now, somebody might disbelieve him, might think he misunderstood the phone call, might, you know, in other ways.
Let me back up a bit, Your Honor. The other problem was it was so vague in this case. I mean, it wasn't sufficient to overcome summary judgment. He did not identify who told him this, when they told him this, why it was reasonable for him to rely on this statement.
Well, he does do that. He says, because I sent the doctor's note in, that they told me I didn't have to keep pestering
But he
him
sent
with phone
in several doctor's
day.
Notes, Your Honor. We don't know whether he was told this before he got a letter from Olin saying you've got to call in your absences, or whether it was after that. And more importantly, he doesn't identify why he was supposedly told this. In other words, say there was somebody in Olin's...
What about the doctor's note? I mean, you know, I don't know if Olin has ever...
What I'm getting at, Your Honor, is he doesn't say that he was told this in order for him to be terminated to prevent an exercise of workers' comp rights or in retaliation for workers' comp rights. Assume, Your Honor, that the statement was made to him by some clerk in the medical department. Maybe they were just mistaken about Olin's policy and thought he didn't have to call in.
Right. That evidence might be important if this were a just cause termination case.
Exactly,
but it's
Your
not
Honor.
A just cause
it doesn't
termination
prove retaliation.
Case.
Even if that statement was made, he has to take it further and prove that statement was made in order for him to be terminated because someone thought he was going to exercise rights under the Workers' Comp Act and wanted to interfere with that right.
Right. And that's where I come back to the Connie DeProe evidence, because there's some dispute about Moore's role in this, Kern's role in this, and who finally makes the decision, and also some dispute about the importance of the unapproved designation in the record. So DeProe writes an email on the 30th of October saying, can we still say his absence is unapproved for this duration? I am not paying him WC pay because I don't have any med records. And she writes some other, and she's corresponding with Kern all
sure.
this time. And she has other communications, November 20, November 30. She's aware that workers' comp is in play, and she is communicating with Kern, to whom Moore reports.
That's true, Your Honor.
So that,
but there
I'm concerned about why that isn't enough evidence to show that there that somebody, a jury, could find that there was a causal link. A jury might find not, you know, but a jury could find yes.
The answer, Your Honor, is that there is no dispute about who made the decision to terminate this case and the basis for that decision. It's very clear in the record.
I think there is a dispute. I mean, it may be clear to you, but I...
Well, Mr. Moore testified that he based the decision only upon an email he received from the clerk in Mr. Beatty's department, stating that Mr. Beatty had not called in his absences for several weeks.
And so if a jury accepted his testimony, that would be fine. But if it's Kern, his superior, who's been talking to DeProe all this time, then couldn't a jury think that actually the reason behind this, now I'm actually even thinking of cat's paw, heaven forbid, but couldn't a jury find that this workers' comp information is what drives Moore into thinking these are unapproved absences and therefore he should be terminated.
Except there's no evidence to support that, Your Honor. There is no evidence from either Mr. Kern and Mr. Moore were both deposed. They had no discussions. Mr. Moore was not even aware that Mr. Beatty had been injured.
But Kern knows.
But Kern wasn't involved in the decision to terminate. Mr. Moore based his decision to terminate solely upon the information he received from the clerk about the unexcused
absences. Copied on the termination email between Moore and Richardson.
He was copied, but Mr. Moore says he never heard back from him before he made his determination to terminate. So it's pure speculation. It's not enough to defeat summary judgment. They just didn't meet their causal link here. Mr. Moore acted completely independently based upon the information he had at the time.
And Moore is the labor relations manager, too,
Moore
right?
Is the labor
he's
relations.
He's at the top of the chain, so he's not a ministerial officer.
No, he certainly felt that he had the authority to act independently, and he did so.
And the email is the link, assistant director of industrial relations, right, to whom Moore reports.
That's right. And no, the email evidence, I believe Mr. Moore does report to Mr. Kern.
Okay.
But he had full authority to make this termination decision in this case, independently. The way he described it in his depo was, he's not really my superior, but he's over me. I mean, he was a little vague in the relationship between the two of them. But Mr. Moore made the decision to terminate, and he did so independently. And the email documents fully support that. I mean, the email chain that's in evidence shows the email to Mr. Moore from the clerk saying, what's going on with this guy? He's got these uncalled in absences. Mr. Moore says, tell me what... To give me a little background, he gets a little background. The whole thing takes a matter of minutes, and Mr. Moore makes the decision to terminate without consulting with Mr. Kern or Mr. Paul or anybody in medical. So there is absolutely no evidence that he was terminated, that Mr. Beatty was terminated because of or in anticipation of filing workers' comp rights. In fact, he didn't file his workers' comp claim until December. He proceeded with that claim, and he reached an agreement with Olin, a settlement agreement in which
but
he stated...
But you don't disagree, of course, that the law covers anticipated workers' comp claims. I don't think there's any significance
I don't disagree with
one
that,
way
Your
or
Honor.
The other about when he actually filed.
No,
they
I
knew
don't.
This was coming, and that was all over the record.
I don't disagree with that. But the decision-maker in this case didn't know it was coming because he didn't know Mr. Moore had even been injured.
Mr. Beatty hadn't been injured.
Oh, I'm sorry, Your Honor. You're correct. Mr. Beatty had been injured. The attendance policy certainly was not responsible for Mr. Beatty's termination. The attendance policy just provided that if leave was unapproved, he had to call in every morning. That was all he had to do, call in every morning to report his absence. The fact that his leave was unapproved was largely due to the fact that Mr. Beatty had not gotten the medical exam Olin had requested, hadn't submitted the documentation. He knew his leave was unapproved, and under the policy, he had to make the phone call every morning, and that's the reason he was terminated. With respect to the arguments regarding Hollowell and Grabs that Mr. Beatty's counsel has made, I fully agree with Judge Posner, excuse me. Illinois law is quite clear that employers can terminate their employees based upon physical limitations or their inability to perform their jobs, regardless of a doctor's note. This case recognized that back in Horton, which remains good law in Illinois. In fact, the Heartland case has affirmed and approved the Horton case. It would be entirely contrary to the at-will doctrine in Illinois for an employee just to be able to show up with a note and say, my doctor says I can't work, and then the employer would be prohibited from ever letting that employee go. That's not the law in Illinois, and any such argument would vastly expand the tort far beyond its intent, according to the Illinois Supreme Court. Your Honors, I would ask that you please affirm the decision of the district court in this case. Thank you.
Okay, thank you, Ms. Sandifer. So, Mr. Barron, your time expired, but we'll give you a minute. Do you have anything further you want to say?
Yes. Thank you for your patience with me, Your Honor.
This court, sitting in the diversity jurisdiction, is required to follow the laws that's stated in Illinois. And the case in Grabs, right out of the opinion, we find that when an employer is faced with conflicting medical opinions, and that's what we have here, their medical department thinks he should be back at work, his doctor thinks he shouldn't, and when we are faced with conflicting medical opinions from the employer's doctor and the employer's IME, an employer may not rely on an IME in terminating an employee for failing to return to work or failing to call in his absences. That's the law in Illinois.
That's not what happened here.
That is exactly.
He was terminated before the IME reports.
Right. And then they didn't have the IME, so they did rely just on some vague opinion from somebody in the medical department.
They didn't rely on that either. Well, the termination decision had nothing to do with any of that.
Why did they ignore, or why did they order him to come back to work and order?
The right hand didn't know what the left hand was doing, apparently.
Well, we think it did, and it's the policy, it's Olin's policy, that our medical department trumps what your doctor says. That policy violates Grabs and Hollowell.
Very remote from the actual case. If it's true that Moore just is acting on an email he gets, it has nothing to do with workman's compensation.
Moore simply applied the policy, and the policy is an illegal policy. I thank you very much. We would ask you to reverse and remand.